This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nelly. Our guest this week is Ryan Heidegger, Executive Director of the Conservation Technology Information Center. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the Soy Checkoff. CTIC's Ryan Heidegger is next. Wanted to take a moment and talk to soybean farmers. Nearly 500,000 of you are in the U.S. growing over 4 billion bushels of soybeans a year. And the Soy Checkoff is working hard to grow demand, innovating, testing, and showcasing new uses in new industries such as firefighting foam, tires, straws, shoes, or 1,000 other products. To learn more, visit unitedsoybean.org and keep on growing. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Ryan Heidegger is a fourth-generation Iowa farmer with a goal of passing his operation to the next generation. Heidegger's family has long embraced soil conservation. While the industry embraces words like sustainability and climate smart, Heidegger says they only further define a heritage of preserving natural resources.
I think they just add to it. Certainly there are a lot of different buzzwords that you hear throughout the industry. We still use conservation ag a lot here at CTIC, but all in all, they may have some unique differences amongst those terms, of course, including regenerative ag, farm resilience. I've heard phrases like weather-ready farms in Nebraska, for example. But all in all, it does have in common using different practices, technologies, and eventually, in a lot of cases, a cost-share program to make the farm ready to handle different weather patterns, ultimately help improve the bottom line and make it more productive, keep the number one asset in place, which, of course, is our soil resources.
Our grandfathers may have planted cover crops, which was a plus and a trend that we're clearly moving back to in the nation today, but they used a moldboard plow, and it was the way that agriculture was back in that day. What about the adaptive practices that farmers are employing today? How is this generation's conservation different than our forefathers?
So there's similarities and, of course, many, many differences. I would certainly point first and foremost to just the ag technology that we have today, as well as, of course, not just years, but decades of published research. You know, my grandfather didn't necessarily know the unintended consequences of running moldboard plow on the disc in many passes through the field. We've seen those benefits. We also know some of the impacts, what that does to soil loss. But again, ag technology probably is the greatest benefit. And of course, that runs throughout seed, the chemistry that we're able to deploy today, as well as, of course, the hardware and software. Thinking about, our own operation, for example, and again, using cover crops, it would not be possible for us to plant green, which means, you know, planting our cash crop, our corn or soybeans, right into a living stand of cereal rye for a cover crop without guidance technology. Everything is kind of a maze when you're planting through 4, 5, 6 feet tall vegetation.
What has been the change with regard to farmers that are employing cover crops and conservation-sensitive practices?
There's a lot of different benefits, a lot of different changes that have occurred with these practices, with these technologies. So let's just use cover crops as an example, which, again, you know, our grandfathers perhaps had used as a form of green manure. You know, we've seen that practice go from about 10 million acres just a little more than a decade ago to now knocking on 20 million acres in 2024. So there's a great momentum, a great trajectory of that practice. And with some of the funding that's been made available, for example, through the Partnerships for Climate Smart Commodities, the Inflation Reduction Act, traditional farm bill programs, there's good reason to believe that we're very likely to be able to hit on 30 million acres of cover crops by 2030. CTIC is proud to be a partner with one of the Climate Smart Commodity projects called Farmers for Soil Health, which was created by National Corn Growers Association, the Soy Checkoff, and the Pork Checkoff. CTIC is helping deliver the farmer-facing technical assistance in South Dakota, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. This program covers 20 states across the Corn Belt and the Midwest. You know, every day we're making progress reaching new producers with this program, and a lot of other climate smart projects are reaching new customers to help them adopt voluntary incentive-based practices as a result of these public-private partnerships.
Let's talk about the MMRV platforms and what that's providing today.
So MMRV, Measuring, Monitoring, Reporting, and Verification, is a growing component of our work. And, of course, for both the public sector and private sector, we want to be able to document what are the outcomes of these investments. What are the soil savings? What are the improvements in water quality? How much carbon is being captured? So there's a number of very proficient, very cutting-edge companies that are advancing work in this space. It is a core prerequisite for all of the USDA Partnership for Climate Smart Commodity projects to, again, quantify the impact of the practices with respect to greenhouse gas reductions. CTIC is proud to be a partner with one of the companies, one of the leading companies called Regrow Ag, along with the Nature Conservancy and a host of other partners that have been working on a program called the Operational Tillage Information System, and that data is proprietary to Regrow Ag, and CTIC is the public-facing provider for that on our website. So you can go look at the adoption rates of cover crops, of conservation tillage, along with the carbon models that are corresponding to those practice changes between 2015 and 2021. So the technology is advancing. NASA is even involved supporting endeavors at USDA. And so, again, these are all very exciting times as a result of these partnerships, as a result of the increased appropriations from both Washington, D.C., as well as state capitals across the country.
Farmers were adopting no-till and minimum-till practices long before we started talking about climate smart and carbon sequestration and sustainability. It was a move that they were making to preserve soil and to improve their productivity. So is the movement now toward cover crops and conservation tillage, is it more motivated by the money that they can make for doing it under certain parameters, or is it more from the farmer's desire to preserve, protect, and to increase productivity?
Without a doubt, the latter part of that. It is to continue to be a great steward, to harness, again, some of these lessons learned, the trails that have been blazed by the so-called early adopters, and the benefits, the coaching and advice that comes with those farmers that have learned through trial and error. None of these conservation practices really are going to you know, be profitable on their own. They're certainly increased costs. Again, just whether you're talking about cover crops or so many of the other conservation practices. So the you know, the producer, and speaking with a firsthand perspective here, you know, we're going to have skin in the game, and that's a good thing. But nonetheless, all of this does relate right back to, you know, the same goals, the same objectives that our fathers, grandfathers have had, and that is to steward the resource that ultimately does make the farm or ranch profitable and able to be passed to future generations. So the cost share is absolutely valuable, and it does play a role in helping get new people to adopt, try to de-risk some of those costs. But even, you know, one example that I'm thinking about, Jeff, is CTIC has done a nearly annual cover crop survey reaching some, you know, 800 farmers almost every year. And in the most recent survey, 2022-2023, almost 90% of the farmers that have used cover crops with cost share said that they would plan to continue that practice without cost share. And that, you know, bodes well for them seeing firsthand the benefits, seeing the value for weed suppression, for better water infiltration, ultimately helping make that cash crop more profitable, help weather some droughts, and even going back to, again, that 2019 pretty disastrous year for Prevent Plant, you know, being able to have increased chances of getting in the field because they were getting better water infiltration and being able to take advantage of those limited planting windows in the spring.
When I've talked with farmers who have employed cover crops and conservation tillage for the first time, correct me if I'm wrong, but many of those have shared with me that this is not a first-year widget that guarantees you money. The return on the investment is more apt to be 2, 3, 5 years down the line as you change the consistency of the soil on the farm. So why is it important, if that's so, that there are programs to help farmers in to encourage farmers to participate and to adopt these practices?
Well, I think you just hit the nail on the head that ROI is a little bit longer term, especially on those two practices, with the exception, a lot of good research, a lot of documented ROI behind integrating livestock into those cover crop systems, having more of a immediate ROI, because in many cases that can help offset forage needs that they may have to provide elsewhere. They give their pastures a little bit greater rest in the spring when they have those cattle out on the crop fields that have growing cover crops. So the cost share, the support, you know, and one of the other items that we really haven't touched on, but, and that is that technical guidance, that the cost share to help buy down the cost of the practice is one component, but another absolutely critical element is that technical support system, and that can come from a lot of different resources. Of course, most notably within the Natural Resources Conservation Service, their field teams, along with local county soil and water conservation districts, have been the long-term providers. But increasingly, you know, the agronomists at ag retail locations are playing an increased role. Farmer-to-farmer learning is another, I would say, underutilized element, something that CTIC is working on and a host of other partners are trying to better harness the lessons that farmers have learned and have them, you know, help transfer that knowledge to other farmers. And that vote of confidence, hearing from one of your neighbors, somebody on the other side of the county, can really go a long way because you know they have experienced these lessons learned firsthand. And they're in a local area to be relevant and relatable. And as just one example, we just wrapped up our latest cover crop survey, which this year focused on advisors. And about half of those who responded to our survey also farm. So they have that firsthand experience. And about 90% of those individuals are using cover crops themselves. So what a great example of them playing a role in their day job, helping advise farmers, but also bringing that real-world practical experience to the table.
As you mentioned, the Inflation Reduction Act included funds to help with conservation smart, conservation tillage practices and climate smart practices. The Department of Agriculture has a number of programs that are oversubscribed but underfunded. What role can a new farm bill or what role can government play in helping to bring about more dollars or outside dollars to encourage producers to adopt these practices?
One of the successful programs that I want to just briefly touch on about that is the Regional Conservation Partnership Program, which I believe was first implemented into the 2014 Farm Bill, and that really sets the stage for the private sector to work alongside USDA and NRCS, share resources, work together again at that local level, at that landscape level that works for supply sheds and a lot of these food companies that are, of course, increasingly bringing their resources to bear in helping farmers within their supply chains. And so the Regional Conservation Partnership Program absolutely should be something not only staying intact, but continue to have additional resources brought to bear for the next Farm Bill when Congress does enact that key piece of legislation. And again, I want to just stress on and touch upon that the role of the conservation technical assistants that NRCS, local soil and water districts play, nonprofits also play a key role in helping put boots on the ground where there's clearly a growing need, where there's momentum on the landscape to see these practices adopted and implemented for the longer term.
It is said that we have a consumer today that wants to know more about their food, not only what it is and what's what the nutritive value of it, but how it was produced and what practices were involved. Knowing that this is happening, there are companies that want to be able to present themselves in a positive light to the consumer. So what programs are taking place today, and do you see greater involvement and those of in use toward consumers that are willing to invest or provide premiums for farmers who adopt production in certain patterns?
This ties right back to that MMRV, the monitoring, measuring, reporting, verification that we talked about earlier, that you know, these technologies, being able to use cutting edge remote sensing satellite technology, also plays a key role for the food companies, ultimately for them to be able to better document and quantify the impacts of all the ingredients and the conservation practices of the farmers, whether you're talking about wheat, corn, soy, any of the other major food crops. And so these MMRV companies, and again, a lot of this, you know, does happen behind the scenes, but it absolutely is a key part of sustainable agriculture today. For these food companies to document the progress, document what is happening in their supply sheds. And one, you know, great example of the industry coming together to share ideas, share insights, share, you know, science findings is at what's called the Sustainable Ag Summit, which is coming up November 20th, 21st in Minneapolis, Minnesota. This will be the 10th anniversary of this event, which will gather some 950 professionals throughout agriculture, including farmers, including agronomists, to C-suite leaders, leaders of government agencies, food companies, nonprofits, all coming together to share a couple of days of learnings, of success stories, and talk about, you know, partnerships that are needed going forward as well.
Ryan, renewable fuel, and I'll speak specifically to ethanol, came in years ago and now is consuming a third of the corn that farmers will produce this year. Sustainable aviation fuel and other renewables are said to be tremendous opportunities for U.S. farmers, but their feedstocks have to satisfy some regulatory approach from Washington that in 2025 and ahead we don't know the rules of. How challenging is it now to try to hit a moving target to make the crops that they raise be eligible for what appears to be a booming market again?
The playing field today has a lot of complexity to it. And, you know, you touched on, you know, one element of that with respect to sustainable aviation fuel, you know, what is coming down pretty rapidly in that regard. The wintertime, of course, is an ideal period of time for producers to maybe have a little bit more bandwidth to be able to evaluate the options, speak to their trusted advisors who are, you know, closer to some of those key program details. You know, this is one area that CTIC and a host of partners are working towards. And this, of course, is part of the challenge today where it's not the traditional farm bill programs as the only options available. You do have a variety of programs and cost share incentives that are out there, again, from the private sector through these unique and very impactful coalitions. And so with, you know, my farmer hat on, how do you keep track of what's available to you today? How do you better understand what the different rules are, like you had touched about, Jeff, what the different timelines and deadlines are? And so this program we're going to be unveiling as a prototype here in Minneapolis is called the Conservation Connector, which aims to be a central clearinghouse that farmers, ranchers, advisors, whether that's a certified crop advisor, whether that's their local ag lender, can all turn to and find out in a local area what programs are available, What are the cost share elements? What are the other strings, if you will, that are associated with those benefits? And then ultimately, who are the service providers that can help see that practice to reality? The cost share is one element, but it's that service provider that can actually see the practice through to fruition. And whether you're talking about a bioreactor in Iowa or cross-fencing, rotational grazing for livestock, or any number of technical proficient programs, this Conservation Connector aims to be that clearinghouse.
So is this tool one that can verify the carbon saving sequestration that has been done according to a particular practice, according to the soil type and region of the country where it's employed?
So in the early prototype phase for the Conservation Connector, it will not have a MMRV component, which is, of course, key to accomplishing what you just described in terms of quantifying the actual tons of carbon or other greenhouse gas reductions. What we're focused on near term is simply the cost share incentives and the service providers. But longer term, we actually see an integration of the MMRV component. So we're taking one step at a time and just trying to do a better job of daylighting all these amazing opportunities that are available today. And that's really the success. That's the win that I'm excited about right now.
Ryan, let's wrap this up with a summary if we can. Draw a picture, if you will, of what needs to be done. What are the industry needs? What are the farmer needs? What are the government supports that are needed to be able to accomplish your goal of 30 million acres by 2030 to continue to stretch toward more conservation tillage on more acres in the U.S.?
So, of course, we think about farm bills in, 4 and 5 year increments. We think about some of these programs in even lesser time windows. As a farmer, of course, we think about our operations, our fields, as a career, almost as a lifetime. Of course, many people think about the book, 40 Chances by Howard Buffett, as an example. And so, to me, to continue to make progress, it's almost thinking about things beyond the next farm bill and thinking about the next generation and what's going to be available to them. How do we get them off to a better start, a more secure start? Because ultimately, those are the producers that have the greatest risk when they're just starting out, when they have the greatest debt load. So how do we reimagine the possibilities for conservation agriculture for that next generation? Perhaps, Jeff, there's even a linkage to how they can get started with FSA loans and these conservation practices to make it more financially viable. So instead of thinking about, cover crops as a cost share for, $25 or $50 an acre, maybe it's substantially more for that that first generation producer that wants to adopt but, has absolutely everything on the line for their operation.
Of course, it's a lot easier to be sustainable when you're profitable, and that's ultimately the goal of every producer in the country. Ryan Heidegger, we want to thank you very much for being with us on this edition of Open Mic. It is Open Mic, Ryan, and today you get the last word.
Well, we all just saw the elections. The new administration will come in. They'll be, being able to pick up where this USDA is leaving off with, again, increased funding that is truly making a difference out on the landscape. One challenge, perhaps, is to, again, bring the resources, bring the private sector and public sector together, perhaps even through some kind of a White House summit on conservation agriculture to continue to take these learnings that we've had, the successes that are growing every single day, and plot a course for the next 4 years.
Our thanks to Ryan Heidegger, Executive Director of the Conservation Technology Information Center, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the Soy Checkoff. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nellie.